Hi, my name is Devin. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for asking me to speak, Blair. Not really, but I get nervous speaking. But I definitely need it right now. Last time I had to speak, my sponsor texted me the night before. He said, "How you doing?" I said, "Not that good. I got to speak tomorrow." He's like, "Well, you better do a good job because everybody's sobriety depends on you." So, and I was like, "You know, it's so true." If that's the case, then just might as well walk out now. But my sobriety date's May 2nd, 2011. I grew up in New Jersey. I come from a big Irish Catholic family. I got like over 40 cousins on one side. So drinking wasn't a big deal when I was a kid. Neither of my parents are alcoholic. I was a pretty normal kid. I was mischievous, I guess you could say. I got in a lot of trouble. And my father was an undercover narcotics cop in New Jersey and New York. So that was pretty interesting. He picked me up from a holding cell a lot in uniform when he was working payroll jobs. So he wasn't too happy about that. But, you know, I started drinking, I think, consistently when I was about 12. I don't remember my first drink. It was probably when I was a lot younger, but I started drinking alcoholically at 12. I remember the first couple times I drank, and I just remember feeling total release from any kind of stress or any kind of problems I thought I had at age 12, which was none. Just like today, my problems are not that major. But, you know, when you're 12, things are a big deal. But I just remember feeling totally comfortable and released when I drank and when I was sober. I felt out of place. I had a ton of friends. I grew up in a neighborhood with a ton of kids. I just always felt out of place. I hear that a lot. People say they felt different. I definitely did feel different. I had a couple cousins that lived up the block, a bike ride away, and their mother, my aunt, was a violent alcoholic, so they stayed with my family a lot because she was in loony bins and treatment centers throughout our whole childhood. So I witnessed that, you know, and my oldest cousin ended up ODing and dying at a young age, and my aunt ended up dying from alcoholism and drugs also. So I saw a lot of bad things happen because of drugs and alcohol, but I didn't have a lot of bad consequences when I was a kid. I had a lot of fun drinking. And, you know, when tragedies happen, I just chalked it up to accidents. And that's, you know, I had a friend about a month away from my cousin dying when I was about 15. She was drunk and ran across the Garden State Parkway and got hit by a car and killed because she was drunk. And I remember all my friends were like, "We're not drinking this whole year." And I was like, "I am." And I did. And I just chalked it up to, you know, tragedy. But I never wanted to see the big picture, how serious this thing is. Like I said, I got in trouble a lot when I was a kid. And, you know, when I was about 17, I got in trouble with something more serious than I usually got in trouble for. And my father sat me down and told me, you know, "I could help you, but I'm not going to help you at all unless you go in the military, go to rehab." So a little skinny 18-year-old white kid in Morgan County Jail, I probably wouldn't have lasted more than 5 minutes, so I chose to join the Marine Corps. And I got a lot of community service, and I got all the charges dropped, and I went in the Marine Corps. And the first day of boot camp, I wish I went to jail. It was a rude awakening for me. It was the best thing I ever did and the worst thing I ever did at the same time. But, you know, people say when they walk in AA rooms, they feel like at home. At first, I never felt like that. But when I went in the Marine Corps, I felt like that. I felt a part of something, and I fit in because Marines and these Navy guys, they like to drink. And I remember I was stationed in Camp Lejeune. And I remember the first day I got done with the school I went to. I went over to Camp Lejeune and I got put with a unit. And I went to go get my key and figure out what room I'm in. And everybody else was already living in the barracks. They'd been in for a couple of years or whatever. I was really new. And I remember being like, man, I hope I don't have some like deadbeat roommate, you know, because I'm going to party. So I go up to third floor and there's like a cat, it's called a catwalk, you know, like a breezeway. And I see these two guys in like their fatigues, but their shirts are off. And the one guy's smashing a bottle on the other one's head. I think they're fighting, but they're laughing. They're friends. They're just drinking. And one of them was my roommate. The guy getting the bottle over his head. He's actually sober in New Jersey today. He's one of us. Go figure. But I instantly, you know, fell in love with the Marine Corps. At that point, it sounds so stupid. It's true, though. You know, no one, I didn't stand out to be a problem drinker like I felt before. You know, I just fit right in. And I, too, went to Japan, and I actually got put on drinking restriction in Tokyo. The first time I went there, so I only went to Tokyo once. I was staying outside of Mount Fuji, so I only got to have fun for one night. And then I got put on drinking restriction. And then when I got, I went overseas a lot, which was good for me. And it was good for me when I went to bad places, because you can't drink when you're operating. But I went to a lot of fun places, too. And, you know, I was stationed in Okinawa for a while, and there's no drinking age there. So I drank a lot. I got put on drinking restriction there, too. And it's funny because I got put on drinking restriction by like a senior NCO when I was like a young Marine. And he put me on drinking restriction and he put me on duty every weekend. So I had duty. And like the second week I had duty, someone comes running in the duty hut like, you got to come down here. Like something's going on. I come down and the guy that put me on drinking restriction is swinging from a telephone pole. And I'm like, this guy put me on drinking restriction? Like, are you kidding me? And I had to write a bunch of like papers and all this stuff for the type of job I did. And all the senior members, they were crazy. So I used to have to go down there and like ask them how to write a patrol order and all this stuff when I was learning. And I went to their room, the same guy's room that put me on drinking restriction, like this is months later. And I walk in the room and there's a hole in the wall from their room to the room next door. And they're cutting each other with beer bottles and fighting. And that's just how we drank in the military. And, you know, we did more dangerous drinking than dangerous work. So, I'd say, and then in 2003, you know, I got deployed to Iraq during the invasion. And, I got to say, you know, coming back from there is when my drinking took a totally different turn. It wasn't fun anymore. You know, I lost a lot of friends when I was overseas and never got to go to a funeral because someone dies, you just, you know, they're gone, you were still working. But when I got out, actually I came back from Iraq and 2 months later went to Afghanistan. And as soon as I came back from there, I got out, which was a bad thing. I had no transition period. 3 weeks after I came back, I was just a free man, which is not, I'm not good with spare time. But the first couple months I was out, I went back to New Jersey, and two guys I worked with, that, you know, I worked in a small unit, so we're all like family. So if someone gets killed and you're within like a couple hours, you go talk to his family, you go to the funeral. And I moved back to New Jersey, and I had two friends that got killed, both from New Jersey, one from Summit, one from Cherry Hill, so in a short period between each other. So the first funeral I went to, completely drunk and just really messed up, and I didn't talk to his family. I sat in the back of the church, and I didn't have the courage to even speak to his family. and a lot of guys were really pissed off at me. And the next funeral, you think I would have redeemed myself, but I did the same thing. I had a friend of mine that operated with this come down from Massachusetts, from Boston, to go to the, and he was Jewish, this kid that died. So they had the funeral at the wake at the funeral, and they do it all in one day, I guess. And we missed it all. We got to the burial site, and that was, you know, I missed it. I failed twice at that, and that really bothered me when I got sober. But, you know, my drinking just took a dangerous turn. Drugs are a part of my story. I'm not going to get into it. But I got into a deep depression. I had a lot of, I felt bad about a lot of things. I drank over a lot, and I stayed drunk when I came home. I got sick in Afghanistan. I got a parasite in me. So I lost like 50 or 60 pounds in like a month. And my health wasn't doing that well. And I came home and I was drinking day and night and other things too. And I had one day I was in a drugstore and I used to have panic attacks a lot. And I felt like I was having a panic attack. And then I woke up in an ambulance. I had a seizure from drinking. And luckily the guy found me underneath a parked car and dragged me out. And I became friends with one of the paramedics that saved my life, really. They called me in as an OD to the hospital. I was just drinking, I think. But I was just in bad shape, and he told me, like, and he was a big drinker, too. And I, at the time, I was managing a bar, and he came in and told me, like, you know how close you came to dying? Like, you, vital sign, you were just in bad shape. And I didn't care at all. I honestly can say I didn't care. I wanted to die, but I didn't want to. My mother, to have someone tell her I shot myself in the head, but I sure as hell thought about it a lot and contemplated it and had the pistol up to my head plenty of times. That's how I felt. And so I continued to drink day and night just to suppress anything I could possibly conjure up in my head. And, you know, I wish I just stayed overseas is what I used to say. I wish I just, you know, got killed over there, because I didn't want to wake up anymore. And I was living in a dump apartment, and the local police there got to know me pretty well. They're at my apartment at least once a week for... I threw a microwave out my window one night into the street. I threw my TV out the window. I was a lunatic. And the town I was living in, like, a long time ago, my grandfather was the chief of police there. So all the cops knew my last name. So I got away with a lot. And, you know, I came home, and I just had a real hard time adjusting back into, like, normal life. It didn't happen for me. It took, like, I'm somewhat well adjusted now. But I got diagnosed with PTSD. I thought it was just bullshit. Excuse me. I didn't even believe it was a real thing. But yeah, I got every symptom of it. And that makes my alcoholism a little harder to deal with. I got to deal with both issues. And right before I moved to Tampa, I was getting in trouble a lot for it. Every time I was drinking, every time it was violent. So my little childish, you know, arrests and mischievous acts turn into, like, me just turn into a violent drunk. And I started to get in trouble. So I figured, you know, let me move to Tampa so I'll get away from all this trouble, all these troublemakers in New Jersey. Go to Tampa. So I came to Tampa, and for the first couple months, I did behave myself. And then I started working in bars. And one quick thing, I want to rewind for a second. I actually worked for a guy in New Jersey. I got a construction job after the bar. Obviously, I didn't last around, imagine a bar. But I worked for a guy, and he was in the program. He was sober, I don't know, over 10 years. And he told me, like, within the first week of me working there, like, I'll save you a seat in AA. He's like, you're a good worker. But he's like, you're a freaking lunatic. You're hungover or drunk. Every day you come into work. But I worked. And one day I was doing a roof, and the customer called him because I was throwing up off the roof. I was out in New York till like 6 in the morning, and I went right to work, and I was like, it was hot, it was summer. So he came to the job, and he kicked me off the job. He told me, go home. I'm like, am I fired? He said, no, just go home, because he understands. Because he told me, you're me 10 years ago, or whatever amount of years. And he called me the next day, he told me to come back to work, and he had a new work truck and like this old beat up work truck. So we took the old one. I'm like, why are we taking this old truck? The AC's broken. And he's like, listen, we're gonna go work for a little bit, and we gotta stop somewhere. I gotta go to a meeting, a noon meeting. This is in New Jersey. So he pulls up to, I pull up to the meeting, and he tells me, you can wait here, you can come in. I'm like, it's like 110 degrees in this truck. I'm not waiting here. There's air conditioning inside. So he tricked me and got me in a meeting, and it was a big meeting. And I remember seeing people I grew up with that I never thought would be in there, and people's parents I never thought would be in there. And it went around the room, people introduced themselves. It got to me, I just said, I'm Devin. I was not about to say I was an alcoholic, because I didn't think I was. I just thought bad things happen to me when I drink. That's it. I had a friend tell me that when I first stopped drinking. Not a good friend. Man, you're good. You just bad shit. You do bad shit when you drink. I was like, yeah. So anyway, I moved to Tampa. I started working in bars. Letting me drink for free and put my hands on people is not the job you should give me. I took full advantage of it. And I put myself on quite a few police reports in Tampa. I had fun again for the first year I came down here. I was drinking, but nothing too terrible happened to me. But I was still being violent and staying somewhat under the radar. But I had to go to 13 weeks of anger management and PTSD counseling from something that happened in New Jersey at the VA. And I remember going to the VA, and it's a room full of like hooligans that look like me. I'm like, this is not going to be good. But, I mean, like, you should, if you could hear some of the stuff in there, it's... But they teach you meditation there. So they turn the lights off, and they got the therapist is a guy. He like lights a candle and puts this music on. And I'm like, the guy next to me's here because he beat the hell out of his wife. The guy to my left just got out of jail like 2 days ago. I'm not closing my eyes and meditating. And the therapist would always... I was apparently the only smart one in there because I kept my eyes open. And the therapist said, hey, Devin, you got to close your eyes to meditate. I said, I'm not closing my eyes. Not in this room. So I pretty much wasted my time in there. As soon as I got done with that, I had to do like an interview when I was done so they wanted to put me on medication with a psychiatrist. And the first question or first couple of questions she asked me were about alcohol. And I'm like, what room did I just walk into? And the first thing she asked me was, how often do you drink? And I lied. I said a couple times a week. She's like, how many drinks do you have when you drink? And I'm like, all right, I can't say two, because that's like the typical, like to answer to a cop. You say two drinks, you're full of it. So I'm like, I got to think of a normal number. So I'm like, and I'm not trying to be, I was dead serious. I told her, like 10. And she was like, 10? She's like, were you willing to go to an AA meeting? And I was like, I got angry, I left. I was like, this lady's out of her mind. she's the second person who's crazy enough to tell me to go to AA. And, I hated her. She asked me about a bunch of my tattoos, insulted me. The nerve of her to ask me why I have, like, skulls and, like, all this weird shit tattooed on me. The nerve of her. And today I talk to her pretty frequently. She's great. She's helped me out a lot. Now that my mindset's changed a little bit. But, I'll get to that later. So anyway, after that counseling, whatever it was, I just got to a place where I didn't, I got on medication, that was the answer. I had PTSD, that's what's wrong with me. I could drink normal, but I never could. And, finally, a lot of things started happening in my head that I really didn't know what to think of. When I came down here, I thought things would get better, but they never did. In my head, it wasn't my surroundings, it was me. And I started to realize it, but I was in denial about it. And I thought about getting sober, but I just couldn't picture life without drinking. I used to say, like, to people, like, what do people do that don't drink? Like, what do? And I still don't really know. But I'll figure it out, hopefully. I'll find a hobby or something. But, one night I was at a bar just like any other night. And nothing happened out of the ordinary. I got kicked out of a bar. I got a ride home, like a responsible adult. And then I got back in my truck and drove back to the bar. So I was like, who the hell are they to kick me out of this bar? I spend money in there. So I went back to the bar. And it was already closed. I didn't know what time it was. And next thing I knew, I had three sheriff's officers pointing their guns in my truck at me. Because I wouldn't get out of my truck at first. And I got out. They got me out. And but this isn't what made me want to stop. This is just bad luck. The world's against me. Someone's got it out for me. I never blame myself. But this night in particular, I got a break. Someone wouldn't press battery charges against me. And they let me drive away drunk. Which doesn't happen. And that's not what changed me. I went home and I kept drinking, and my state of mind was just, I just did not care at all. I didn't want to take the easy way out and kill myself, but I did. I wanted to. I just didn't want my mom to have to get that message. But I went home and kept drinking, drank myself into a blackout, and the next day I woke up and I was looking through my cell phone, and there was a video on it, and it was me in my bathroom mirror with a loaded revolver with the hammer back to my head, and I was laughing. And I wasn't upset, I was laughing. And the video lapsed, and I don't know what happened. I passed out, but it scared me. I'm like, man, I don't want to die. And that day I walked into 3333, I went to a meeting. That's, all the bad things that happened didn't do anything, but for some reason that video, I just saw a look in my eyes, and this is what, I wasn't there. And I knew I was eventually going to die some way or another if I was, if I kept drinking. So I came to AA, and, I got lucky. I went into a meeting and I saw someone that I already knew. I knew a couple people in the rooms, and was lucky enough to have a guy sponsor me that I already knew. And he had helped me previously with no benefit to himself, so I already had a taste of what people are like in AA. He was just a good guy, and he sponsored me. I didn't do anything I was supposed to. I did everything you're not supposed to do in sobriety. I can't even say I was sober. I came in and I was on a little maintenance program of my own. I wasn't drinking, but I was doing everything else. And it lasted 4 months. And on the day I would have had 4 months sober, I drank. And 3 hours later, police were at my door for a domestic charge. 3 hours later. And, you know, I was like, all right, maybe I'm 2 for 2 now. Last time I drank, and this time, something's wrong with me. So next day, I got honest. I went and met with my sponsor. I told him, you know, I haven't ever been sober. He said, yeah, I know. Like, come on. I thought I was fooling everybody. But, you know, I got honest at that point. And I didn't like it, but good things started to happen. And, you know, I ruined my relationship with my family. I wasn't allowed in their house for a while. And I had no relationship with my family at all. And I was overseas so much, I missed, you know, I was overseas for Christmases, Thanksgiving, and then I'm home in New Jersey, the same state they live in, and I don't see them for, you know, it's not a good thing. But I have a great relationship with my family now, and, you know, things happen in AA that when I first came in here and heard people speak, I'm like, that guy's so full of it. Like, there's no way it's going to get that much better. But, you know, it really does. Anyone who's newer than me, it really does get better. If I could stay sober, anybody can. And I truly believe that. I mean, I can't believe how long I've been sober. It's not that long, but it's long for me. And, you know, I still struggle today. I don't act right all the time. You know, I didn't know how to pray when I came in. I had a huge, like, you know, well, religion is the same thing as spirituality. I had a huge conflict in my head about it. I just got rid of all that at one point. It took me a while. And I just started praying simple. I woke up and would say, God, help me be nice today. That's it. Help me be nice. And I'm back to that right now because I haven't been nice. So that's what I pray for the past couple months. But, you know, sobriety is really, it's just amazing what happens to you as a person after being sober for some time because, you know, the way I think now is not at all the way I thought when I was out there. And, you know, sometimes I forget. I'm a big forgetter, you know. That's why I'm glad that I had to hear myself ramble on tonight because I forget all this stuff. I remember, like, all the great stuff. Like, man, I miss drinking. So, you know, I say that in my head. I'm like, I really miss drinking. But I don't. You know, I'd much rather be sober, but I forget why I'm here and why I can't drink. And, you know, I got to remember my disease is going to tell me that I could drink. And I know that. And, you know, coming to meetings and hearing other people share, you know, like, guys shared before me, like, that's my story. That's everybody's story. It's great to hear someone else say it. You know, it's like stories are irrelevant. It's all the same. You know, and not getting judged for, you know, what we are. And I just love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't been loving it lately. But I really do. I appreciate it more, you know, today than I have in the past couple months. About a month before I hit a year, I just went through a bad... And nothing is wrong in my life at all. I can't complain about anything. I shouldn't complain about anything, but I do. I got like those 12-year-old problems again. Like everyone's not doing what I want. You know? They're childish problems, but I don't have any real problems today. Thanks to this program and, you know, prayer and meditation and sponsorship. Sponsorship's so important. And, you know, I'm naturally a selfish person. Extremely selfish. So, you know, people always say when you're having trouble, take yourself away from yourself and help somebody else. That's like the best bit of advice I got in AA because Anytime I do that, good things start happening. When I'm worried about me 24/7, like, obviously I'm going to drive myself nuts and I'm going to question why I'm coming here. But, you know, when I hear someone speak that has the same story as me, is that's why I'm here. I need to constantly come here and remind myself why I'm here. And I really appreciate you guys listening to me. Thanks.
I've asked Alexis to read Dr. Bob's last message.
I'm Alexis. I'm an alcoholic. And this is Dr. Bob's last message. It was delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago, played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem.